Hi, this is Cedric Dark, and welcome back to ASAP Nowcast. I'm going to talk with Dr. Cara Borelli. She's an emergency medicine resident at UT Health San Antonio and our ASAP Now resident fellow. And I'll also be speaking with Dr. Ben Abo, an EMS and emergency physician and medical director for multiple fire departments in Florida. He's the team manager for Miami-Dade's Fire Rescue Urban Search and Rescue Team and faculty for the upcoming EMS Fellowship with Florida State University. He'll be talking with us about the Surfside condo collapse and what it was like to be a first responder on the scene there. But we're going to start with Dr. Borelli, and she's going to discuss with us some choices of reading materials from residents across the country.
All right, let me introduce Dr. Cara Borelli. She's with UT Health San Antonio. She's our inaugural resident editor at ASAP Now, with us today to discuss her article in the October issue of the magazine, where we're discussing some book selections from her and other residents across the country. Welcome, Dr. Borelli.
Hi, thank you. So I started my first column on physicians who write, and this was about people who had been doctors, who were authors, or at least people who had at least gone to medical school, at least made it to the first day of medical school. And then for my second article, I decided to do it on doctors who read. So this is residents' selections from across the U.S. on book recommendations for books that were inspiring to them and that they would recommend to residents or attendings. I was really excited with the breadth of the recommendations. We got autobiographies, we got history books, poetry collections, short story collections, just a really great breadth, which I think reflects the breadth and the reasons for why we read. Like, we read to learn, we read to reflect, we read to escape. And then I wanted to talk briefly, we had a lot of great recommendations that were selected, and then we had some other ones where we didn't have enough time to go through all of the recommendations. So I wanted to go ahead and share some of the ones that didn't make the publication list, but are also great recommendations.
Tell us the ones that are in the magazine really quickly, and then we can go through in a little bit more detail maybe on some of the ones that didn't quite make the cut.
Yeah, The Elephant Vanishes was submitted by Ashley Siplicki. By Haruki Murakami. It's a short story series, very vibrant, and the author recommends it for the wittiness and vibrancy of the short stories. Then we had two books that were related to vaccinations and viruses, which seems to be a hot topic right now. We had Microbes, The Life-Changing Story of Germs, and then we also had On Immunity, an Inoculation Book by Ulovitz. So these are two options for books. One of them is more of a like facts and about viruses, and the other one is more of like a philosophical discussion on vaccinations. And then another recommendation was Milk and Honey, which is a poetry collection submitted by someone who does poetry performances, and she really connected to that through the poetry as a method of exploring and reflecting on her life. The last one is The Scalpel and the Silver Bear, submitted by Dr. Jessica Evans Wall. And it's a story about a Native American surgeon and about her life.
All right. So we have a selection of books that are going to be in the magazine in October that everyone can read through. But there are plenty of things that were not able to make the final cut. And which ones were those? Why weren't you able to keep them in with the others?
So some of the other ones that didn't make the cut were, there's a book called Anyone, Anything, Anytime, A History of Emergency Medicine, which I unfortunately haven't had a chance to read yet, but that's definitely on my list. It's about the history of emergency medicine. I'm a big history of medicine enthusiast. And then another one was just for Shakespeare. And I think that Shakespeare is a great read for any ER shift. I feel like there's at least one exit pursued by a bear or exit pursued by a snake at least every shift. Our residency had a really similar idea where they all discussed books that they would recommend for residents and for attendings. And so I like really some of their recommendations. There was East of Eden by John Steinbeck and Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky, both of which have very heavy themes of guilt. Crime and Punishment in particular is a very interior philosophical novel. And then another one that they recommended that I still have not had time yet to read, unfortunately, was When Breath Becomes Air, which is the autobiography by Paul Kalanithi, which is about a neurosurgeon who gets diagnosed with metastatic lung cancer. And it's his story of how he and his family make his way through that diagnosis. And then another one was Quiet by Susan Cain, which is about introversion and leadership, which I thought was very interesting as someone who is a bit introverted, how you can have different personalities in emergency medicine and still be an effective leader within the ER. So those were some of the ones that didn't quite make the cut, but I think that are worth mentioning.
All right. Well, thanks so much. One of the things I'm reading right now is Jonathan Cohn's book, The 10-Year War, which is about the Affordable Care Act. It's a little bit more of a historical take on things, which is interesting when you go back and you look at things from what's relatively recent history, the things that you remember, but then trying to read it from someone else's viewpoint again and living through it a second time, it's always fairly interesting. What are you currently reading right now?
I'm rereading two of my favorites, which is Notes of a Crocodile by Xu Maojin and translated into English by Bonnie Huey, and then Giovanni's Room, which is by James Baldwin. I really like them both. They're very complementary novels, very different eras, very different times, but very similar themes of like sexuality and subversion. Notes of a Crocodile is set in 1980s in Taipei, and Giovanni's Room is set in, I believe, 1950s in Paris. But very well written and then very beautifully translated for Notes of a Crocodile.
All right. One of the resonants I was working with recently was reading the classic House of God by Samuel Shim. It's something I remember reading when I was a young resident, and I still take some of the lessons from it. One of them is when you're going into a code, check your own pulse first. It's something that I think as people have started to read it now, one of the resonants that was working with me was reading it and didn't really like the book all that much. Thought that it was a little antiquated and maybe chauvinistic. What have you heard or from people or your contemporaries as to what they're thinking of this classic novel of life and death in the American hospital?
Yeah, I definitely hear quotes from it every once in a while from residents and attendings. Some of the sayings unfortunately still hold true, but yeah, there's some scenes that I listened to it as an audiobook while I was driving to my interviews, and there are definitely some scenes that unfortunately have not stood the test of time in terms of their discussions of gender and how they portray women in the book in particular is upsetting and not as humorous as I think it was written to be.
Was there anything that you've taken out of it on the positive end?
Yeah, I feel like one thing is that understanding that some of the things that frustrate me about medicine, that they were frustrating people back in the 1970s. On one hand, it's very frustrating that the system hasn't changed and that some of the things impeding healthcare are still present. But on the other hand, it is also nice to have someone in your shoes to understand that the experiences and frustrations of being a resident are something that was universal, that it's not just you. There's other people out there who are feeling some of the same emotions. So I thought that was a very interesting take to see some of my reflections written very honestly and very raw description of emotions. Things like going through when a patient dies and things like being frustrated without being able to get people care, understanding that other people are experiencing those emotions too.
That definitely is something that I think in the piece that you write for ASAP Now, some of the other residents had mentioned journaling and putting their own emotions down on paper. It's something I've done throughout my career, going back even to medical school through residency and even to today, is writing down some of my experiences. And when I go back and look at them years down the road, it's fairly interesting when you go back and read about things that you experienced, because now you have this portion of distance from everything and this portion of time that's elapsed that allows you to reflect on stuff that obviously were big issues at the time, but you have a little bit of space and some nuance to appreciate them in a different light.
Yeah, so I think that some of the books that are written about medicine, there's a big difference between the books that are written for other physicians and the books that are written for the wider public, just in terms of what I get out of them. I usually am able to enjoy the books that are aimed towards physicians more than the medical books written towards the broader public, just because I feel like it's a higher level of medical understanding that's required. But I think that it's really important to have books for the general public about health, to have these books be accessible to someone who doesn't have a background in medicine, but who wants to learn more, as a good bridging point to learning more. And I think it is really important to have physicians involved in this conversation. Thank you so much to everyone who submitted recommendations. I appreciated reading all of them. And I have a lot of books that you guys have suggested that are on my reading list now. So I appreciate everyone submitting.
What do you have on tap for the next resident column in ASAP Now?
For the next column, we have a essay that is on the history of the essay, but that also combines an aspect of narrative medicine, a story about ER resident whose patient overdosed on opioids.
This reminds me of a book that I read recently by Anna Lemke, a physician, called Drug Dealer MD, How Doctors Were Duped, Patients Got Hooked, and Why It's So Hard to Stop. And it was an interesting book, very short, easy read, talking about the opioid epidemic, how it started and how physicians got into the knack of prescribing and maybe overprescribing opioids for our patients, and how patients themselves were unwilling participants in this, ultimately getting hooked on these drugs and suffering major consequences in their lives. So it'll be interesting to read your next piece in the residence column of ASAP Now, because then we'll get to see how this interaction occurs from the perspective of a physician taking care of a patient. Dr. Cara Borelli, thank you very much for joining us on ASAP Now, and I'll continue to see you throughout the year because you're with us working on the magazine as one of our resident editors. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
November is right around the corner, and November 11th is Veterans Day. Many emergency physicians have served in our military, and to honor them, ASAP Now would like to share some of your stories with our readers. If you have photos of yourself in service to America from 9/11 to the fateful withdrawal of the last service members from Afghanistan in 2021, please send them in a brief caption to asapnow@asap.org. From the editorial team and the writers of ASAP Now, we would like to thank our veterans for securing the freedoms we all enjoy. Now, back to the conversation.
All right, welcome back. And we're with Dr. Ben Abo, who is an emergency physician in Florida and who was there on scene responding to the Surfside condominium collapse in Florida over the summertime, for those of you that may remember it. There's a great photo essay in this month's ASAP Now that Dr. Abo wrote and provided many of the photographs for that detail his experience there. I wanted to bring him in and talk a little bit more about it. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today, Ben?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this, as well as the opportunity to the whole process with writing the article and working with your people to put it together was actually quite cathartic for me, quite healing too. So I really appreciate it all.
Certainly, and I'm glad that you're able to get some healing out of that. It seemed to be a very stressful event for you, but for the listener, can you just walk us through when you first showed up on scene, what it was like?
To put in perspective, so I live in Naples, and I had plans to go north to one of my other fire departments, and I was walking the dog when I found out what happened and pieced together and raced over. And when I pulled up, utter chaos, just trying to make a controlled situation out of what was going on. And everyone was still trying to figure out what was needed and what was going on, as any of these scenes would entail. You still had multiple car alarms sounding, a smoke alarm still going off, fire alarms from multiple buildings still sounding, as well as all the diesel trucks and the generators that you hear and commotion and police trying to keep certain people back. And I'm trying to figure out what kind of perimeter needed. And we had multiple people, lots of firefighters and personnel on scene, from engineers to our canine was arriving, to a lot of the firefighters that were already on scene, and then the urban search and rescue team that was coming in further in and around the building, a number of saves and evacuations had already commenced. And when I got there, basically it was kind of find the USAR chief and find command, check in, say what was going on, and come around the back and figure out how to get down into the garage, which was basically from a floor that had collapsed down, and touch base with the ongoing rescue team to make entry into that garage as we were figuring out everything else under the rubble, and make sure the building that was still standing, the part of it, was evacuated. Of course, trying to do all that with having people make sure that it was safe and not going to further come down and figure out what your safe distance is, but kind of just piecing together everything that happened and where people were at with things.
And that was a lot of your role, was kind of making sure that everybody else is safe in that situation.
I'm the coordinating manager, the medical director for the urban search and rescue team. So Dr. Job, who's the medical director for the county fire department, was actually there by the time I got there, and he was kind of doing some things outside. My role, my first priority is my teammates, whether they have two legs or four legs. So the dogs, my team members, and all the firefighters and personnel that were already there, that's my first priority. Make sure they stay healthy and alive and make it home. Everybody goes home. And then to coordinate any rescue efforts. So if we have to, we had people trapped, if I need to prolong field care versus do emergency field surgery or anything like that, make that decision as well. So priority first is my team safety, health, well-being, and then how can we deliver prolonged care in that austere environment.
I think that's one of the things that, you know, not a lot of emergency physicians necessarily get this particular type of training, obviously. You know, most of us will do maybe a small rotation with EMS at least, which gets you traveling around and seeing some of that aspect, but this is a very specialized component of that. So what would you share to just the regular emergency doc that doesn't usually get to do this as part of their daily work? What are the lessons that you learn from this kind of preparation, and how do you stay prepared for this?
For one, everybody has a role, whether you're going to be in my position and actually there, boots on the ground or you know, in the hole, as we say, or on the pile. Everybody has a role. So I needed my other emergency physicians to be able to work in the pit when I'm supposed to be in the ER. And at the same time, for one, everybody has a role, from working in the pit to being boots on the ground or on the pile or whatever in my role, and Dr. Yee, Dr. Bledsoe, or some of the other docs there. And then also for anybody that's receiving any of these patients to really need to know that what EMS and fire are going through or other physicians are going through on scene. So need to listen, have two ears and one mouth for a reason to figure out what's going on, really understand this kind of chaotic, hopefully once in a lifetime type of scene, as well as be compassionate to what the firefighters and paramedics are going through. I think those are the three main things that all emergency physicians should know about.
So you're on scene, you've told us now a little bit what the average emergency physician should know a little bit about sort of the medical management aspect of this. But then when you're there, you're doing a lot of these things, and again, the pictures that you share with us at ASAP Now are pretty telling. You talk about the memorial wall that people set up impromptu. There's pictures of you and other coworkers on top of the pile of debris, you know, wearing all your safety gear, trying to help out in the situation. And then you also took time to reflect and actually collect some mementos that were just there. And there's one thing that you were saying. You wrote, floating in the pool water was a black and white wedding photo, probably from the late 70s, taken inside a synagogue. You know, for me reading it, there's a moment when you pause and you think about, you know, the humanity of everything that's going on and what people have lost. And, you know, for the people that had to try to escape, you know, I think you described, like, they don't have time to collect their belongings or mementos. How was that moment, you know, going through that sort of personal detail of what you found in the pile for you?
It was this weird flux of, like, just gut down to the floor reality of what had happened, where it became even more real than what was going on, where the loss, I mean, people's livelihoods and then the lives, and then some people are less sad about the elderly. They're like, well, they had a great life. But a kid dying or someone younger is a lot more worse. But there are certain cultures and people that would take it as there's a huge part of history that's lost. And so it was this real flux of just what everyone might be feeling. Like, I felt like all those emotions that all these people would have, I was experiencing all of them. And still in the back of my mind, wondering, like, is this from my friend's apartment? Is this, you know, is this... Because I knew I had four people that lived in the building that were unaccounted for. And that's directly, as opposed to, I realized how many connections and firefighters, families, and were lost and all. So it was just this real flux of emotions and reality sinking in. And at the same time, an immense pride that I had the opportunity to be there for so many people. So it was flux of sadness and pride and almost motivation for enduring what I'm enduring, and the work and studying that we do over the years to endure to get to this point so that we can do what we need to do or figure out what we need to do. That actually kind of leads back to another, it just popped in my head, the other thing that I think that all emergency physicians need to know is that disasters and people don't follow textbooks. So you can't really plan under a tabletop. You never know what all the details are going to be. So you have to understand that it's not perfect, but we need to always grow to be able to overcome the differences in almost MacGyver medicine sometimes.
First of all, let me ask you this. Did the four people that you knew that were in the building, did they make it out okay?
They, all four people that I was missing were accounted for, but they all died.
Oh, sorry to hear that, Ben.
Thank you.
And, you know, I mean, you didn't describe that in the article, and, you know, obviously that's something that's, you know, deeply personal and probably difficult to share with everybody. You did share the story that I think got reported widely in the news about one of the firefighters whose daughter was found in the building, in the rubble. And the look that you saw on his face, can you describe that?
Yeah, so one of the firefighters, and we saw from day one, was initially on the pile. And then when a number of us realized and were like, wait a second, you're not on the task force, you're not trained for this, like, this is why you're here. We get it, but had to move him to the side and see his face every day watching us as we're getting down to where we found her. And then seeing that, his face, when we carefully had found and removed her body and everything shuts down, a lot of the machinery, we had all lined up and had a moment for the body that was found, and seeing his face, which was just, this was another combination where you can kind of see him fluxing between this sense of closure but immense sadness. He knew. He's a firefighter, you know. He knew the likelihood, and as we were going through things, he still had hope, but he knew. And so that moment when it really sinks in, the reality of that sense of closure, of just pain, but closure, is a weird, another flux. And you could see it on his face. There was no dry eye there. It, you know, hearing the sobs, which is okay. Like, we're made to do this. We're made to have emotion. But yeah, to see the flux, but mostly the sadness on his face was pretty, it tears your heart up a little bit. And by a little bit, I mean a lot.
Yeah, so it's one of those things, I think, in our profession and what we do, we run that very difficult line between being the completely emotional, empathetic beings that we're trained to be, and then I think because of the fact that we see such terrible things sometimes of closing ourselves off and compartmentalizing it, extraordinarily difficult, I think, what you had to do just to revisit this piece and write it and share it with us, with the ASAP Now audience. So I really want to thank you for doing that and for speaking with us today so that we could get a little bit more of what happened from your perspective and share that with us. So thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Well, again, that was Dr. Ben Abo, and I just want to thank him for joining us on ASAP Nowcast. This is for the October 2021 edition. We'll see you next month. Thank you for listening to this episode of ASAP Nowcast. And keep an eye on those mailboxes for November's issue of ASAP Now. We're going to have a lot of good things in there, including an ASAP Scientific Assembly recap. We're going to talk about COVID-related vaccine ITP. We're going to talk about what happens to your money because of inflation. And of course, how geriatric patients are under-triaged when they have falls. These and so many more things in the next issue of ASAP Now. And I'll see you next month with a couple of guests to discuss a few of the articles in the magazine.